Podcast, a weekly tour of sports, pop culture, you know the deal. One of the craziest shows you listen to. And we are getting going today with a very special guest. But first, going to tell you about the great service we've been talking about on this program the last few weeks, MyBookie. Lots of betting services. You don't know about their payouts. You're just always left guessing at the end of the day when it's going to come, when you're going to get that money you earned betting. But not with MyBookie. Join today, and they're going to get your money to you, and they're going to get it to you fast, as well as, thanks to our special deal, a 50% bonus. So whenever you use this site, if you're betting on sports, you're trying to bet on the playoffs a little bit, 50% of your bet will be matched through MyBookie, just using our special promo code, Bobcast, B-O-B-C-A-S-T. That's mybookie.ag. You can find it online, or you can give them a call, 844-900-BETS, 844-900-BETS. Play, win, and get paid with MyBookie. That's that. I'm Bobby Manning. We're getting rolling today. It's a fantastic day. We have Matt Moore with us, the guy who created Hardwood Paroxysm, a regular writer over at CBS Sports, a true basketball head. Cut the basketball in half, put it over your head, cut the two eyes out, just like me. We're in the same boat there. So it's good to have him here today. Matt, you ready for the playoffs, man?
Ready as I'll ever be, man. I mean, no choice about it. You got to be ready for it. I mean, it's been a great regular season. It's been intense. It's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun. But, you know, I can't wait for these games where it matters. There's so much to explore. There's so much to find out. We're going to find out so much about all these teams over the next couple months. It's going to be great.
So you were feeling sick a few days ago. We had to push this back a little bit. Was it the Celtics stealing that one seed that made you feel a little bit better yesterday?
Yeah, you know, that really healed me right up. No, man, like, I got two kids, and they both gave me something. I've caught two different diseases in the last week, so it's been tough battling that during the stretch run of the playoffs. But, hey, playoffs, you got to play sick. You got to play hurt, right? Mm-hmm. So I got to write sick. You got to play hurt. You got to battle through it. No excuses.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the Celtics a little bit. This is what I really wanted to get into with you today. We butt heads on the Celtics a lot. You know, we had that bet early in the season. I thought Isaiah Thomas was going to lead the league in scoring. Fell a little bit short, just a little bit, a couple points. But fantastic season for him. Love what the team did this year. But, you know, on your side, you're always a little pessimistic. I mean, they're the one seed, 53 wins. They dominated from start to finish, a little hiccups here or there, but I think they're ready for a long, good playoff run. Not so much on your end, huh?
They've had a phenomenal regular season. Brad Stevens deserves Coach of the Year consideration. Isaiah Thomas was a revelation this season. He was brilliant. One of the truly best pure scorers this league has of anybody. For Thomas to have done what he's done, elevating his game, the leadership role that he's taken, how he's really embraced being the guy for Boston. Jay Crowder had an awesome season, I thought. I thought that Al Horford was Al Horford, maybe not as good as Al Horford has been, but a good Al Horford season.
Pretty good.
He was pretty good. You know, I thought that Marcus Smart was terrific in what he brought. He really showed that, for all the talk about the jumper, he does so much more that really makes him valuable. Avery Bradley had to fight through a lot of injuries, but was still, you know, Avery Bradley in large part all the time. And they just got good contributions, and they won a bunch of regular season games, and that's terrific. That's awesome. I am not sold on what this team can do. I do not see them having a long playoff run. I think they'll get out of the first round. But there's a lot about this team that there are, it's not a Boston thing, which is what everyone kind of jumps to. It's like, you just hate Boston. I'm like, no, man, I love Boston. Are you kidding me? It's one of my favorite cities to go to. It's incredible. And it's not a Celtics thing. Celtics are a legendary franchise. I mean, it's a legendary franchise. It's not an Isaiah Thomas thing. I hyped up Thomas. I've lost my mind when he went as Mr. Irrelevant in the draft. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, this guy was one of the best scorers in the country, and he's Mr. Irrelevant? Mm-hmm. Are you nuts? I thought he was good in Sacramento. I thought he was good in Phoenix. But when I look at how teams are constructed, I look at whether or not they're built for playoffs. There's this team can win a lot of regular season games, and there's this team can win in the playoffs. And look, you don't get there unless you win those regular season games. You can be a, you know, possession-based, can play tough and physical, all that stuff. And if you don't have the weaponry to get through a regular season, it doesn't matter because you're not going to be in the dance. The Celtics are. They're the number one seed. Mm-hmm. But look, they're led by small guards, no rim protection. They struggle. They have a lot of guys who are limited in their offensive ability. They lack secondary playmakers. They have become more and more reliant on Isaiah Thomas. There are mechanisms which really tend to screw with them offensively, and their defense was bad for much of the year and then mysteriously jumped 10 spots in the last 2 months of the season.
They started moving hustling a little more. Things started to turn around.
I'm supposed to believe that all of a sudden they're fixed, and I'm not sold. Now, if the Celtics go in and they blow the doors off the Bulls and they go into that second round matchup and they wipe the floor with the Wizards, that's all they got to do for me. They do that, and I'm like, all right, they're legit. They're one piece away. If they beat the Cavaliers and they get to the finals, most unbelievable season ever. That's incredible. That's amazing.
I want to make sure that you're not basing any of this off last year's postseason, though, because I hear a lot of people that point to last year's postseason and say, there you go, there's the evidence, they're not built for the playoffs. This year's team's a lot different than last year's team.
They're different, that's true, but the same problems exist, which is you are going to have problems when your best player is 5'10". And I don't like that. I'm not against small dudes. That's awesome that he's able to produce like he is. But in the playoffs, when you get away with a lot more, when two guys don't just blitz you, but blitz you hard, when two guys close on you at the rim hard, when you deal with fouls that put you down constantly and knock off your attention just a little bit, all that stuff matters. And Thomas has not been an amazing playmaker. He's a good point guard in terms of being able to distribute. He was amazing in their one win over the Cavaliers. He was amazing in that game in terms of finding open shooters. The Cavaliers' rotations were also horrible, but he still found him and made him pay. But we've also seen teams blitz him, like in that last Cavaliers game, and what can really wind up happening. And if that happens, that's a big issue. Now, Bradley was out last year, Olynyk was out last year, and Jay Crowder wasn't 100%. The problem I get into with this is if I start going down and saying, oh, no, they can win a playoff series because if they're healthy, they can win. Like, it was just injuries. Then I'm never going to be able to say that any team is limited in their playoff capacity. Everyone gets hurt. This is the NBA. Everybody gets hurt. That's a reality. And the Celtics are going to deal with an injury. At some point between now and whenever they're done, someone's going to get hurt. It happens to everybody. That's the playoffs. And they're going to have to be able to win through that. And these are the questions that I have. Now, do I think they're frauds? They're not going to win the first round playoff series. They're a joke. No, come on, man. They won the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They're a good team. They could be a great team. But they got to prove it. They got to show me. You got to get there.
This is the year. So James Harden, he's your MVP vote. Read through the article. Fantastic work there. I was a little surprised. I think a lot of people were surprised on the conclusion you ended up coming to there in the very end. It kind of came down to you for the combination of his distribution that made the team better as well as his elite scoring. But Westbrook had such a good, not even such a good year. Like, we're never going to see a season like he had again. That's how good of a year it was for Westbrook. How were you able to pass up on Westbrook in the end in your MVP vote?
I hope they get co-MVP. I hope that they both win. I don't want any of them to lose. I hate this vote. This vote is a nightmare. Usually I'm like, when it's close, usually I'm able to say, like, no, it's definitively this. I can't do that. I'm not in that spot right now. That's not where I'm at. I think Russell Westbrook is just as deserving of the MVP as James Harden is. I think Kawhi Leonard is almost as deserving as both of them for MVP. Westbrook's season is historic. We're never going to forget it. It was amazing. It was so much fun to watch. And I'm going to have to live with the fact that I didn't give that guy MVP. I also don't think he needs MVP. Like, it's not like, oh, he doesn't win MVP, therefore what he did is invalidated. That's nonsense. And you can't say, like, well, he did what he did, so the vote's invalidated. No. Look, I went through and I watched everything. I looked at every single data metric. I looked at every single – I watched every possession of all four guys. I'm not bragging. I have to prove the credentials because there's a lot of voters that will say stuff, and they're just like, this is what I think, and that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. That's the end of it. And I'm like, no. Look, if I want to say something, the readers deserve to know why I think it. And the reason is I went back, and using Synergy Sports, I watched every offensive and defensive possession of all four candidates. I watched all of them. I went to the gym with my iPad and I watched them on loop while I was on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. My daughter is going to sleep and I'm rocking her to sleep. I've got the iPad propped on my lap and I'm watching Harden turnovers. I watched every single possession and I looked at all the data. I looked at all, and I watched their games in full. I watched key games from them over that I'd already seen throughout the season to be able to get a sense of what it is that they did for their team. Harden made his team better when he was on the court than Westbrook made his team. And you could say that's teammates, but I can't punish James Harden for having good teammates, nor can I reward Russell Westbrook for having not bad, but offensively limited ones. Russell Westbrook's greatest impact is on offense. His defense grades out as fine this year. It's not good. It's fine. His impact is on offense. The Thunder were 16th in offensive rating this year. They weren't a good offense. We had James Harden had two 50-point triple-doubles. Russell Westbrook had three and a 57-point triple-double in there. That's amazing. We had DeMar DeRozan's scoring streak to start the season. We had Isaiah Thomas's, you know, December run where he was just absolutely carrying the Celtics by scoring every single point. You know, we had the early season Cavs who were dominant. We had Kawhi Leonard's incredible run versus all of the MVP candidates where he just destroyed everybody. We had the Golden State Warriors looking like the team that we kind of expect them to be. I didn't find that too interesting, but you know, it was there. We had the Rockets kind of coming out of nowhere and showing what they're capable of. We had the Wizards finally looking like an actual NBA team. We had all of these games. We had great games every night. We had high level of play. The execution level was great. It was just a season where we had a lot of really good teams. We just had a lot of really good teams playing high level basketball. And when you have that plus the kind of scoring performances that we saw, it makes for a really exciting product.
A lot of really good teams and really good players, even on bad teams. I mean, the Devin Booker effect this year, too, and some of those guys that were on those lottery teams really got people revved up, too. The Wolves, still a lot of promise there. There's just so much talent in the league now. I think that's the biggest thing at the end of the day is that every team, or almost every team, has hope. The Nets don't have hope, but almost every team has a little bit of hope for the future. So perception's a big thing in this league. I saw it this year. Everyone thinks the Cavaliers are fine, even though the last month, it got a little shaky there. Throwing it back to the Celtics, a lot of people have a lot of assumptions about what the Celtics are. It's a very perception-driven league, especially this year, I felt like. Why do you think the NBA, more than any other league seemingly, fans, even the media, are so drilled in the perception rather than what they're seeing right in front of them? Because, you know, I think there's a lot of warning signs with the Cavs right now. It's LeBron. They're going to flip the switch. That's what everyone's saying. And I don't know. We'll see. But it just seems drilled in perception more than anything else.
You know, we'll see. I think there's a lot of people that are worried about the Cavs, but you don't want to look stupid. You don't want to sit there and say, like, well, they're just screwed, and then have them come out and do what they've done the last couple of years. Look, they still have the best player in basketball. They still have a roster that's got Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. They've got Tristan Thompson, who's phenomenal. They've got experience. They know what it takes to get there. They're a team that does not give max effort. And this is the thing is, like, I talked to somebody that covers them daily a couple weeks ago, and he told me, he's like, they're like that kid that knows that he can pass the class, that knows he's smarter, so he doesn't show up and he doesn't study and he doesn't do the homework, and then he shows up on the final day and he passes the exam and he clears the class. That's the regular season for them. Versus I think the Celtics are very much the opposite. The Celtics are what I would refer to as a try-hard team. Mm. And that sounds condescending and patronizing, but it's not, because look, there are 14 teams that – not 14. There's about 10 teams that missed the playoffs entirely because they did not give the kind of effort that the Celtics did night after night. They didn't have the discipline or the focus. They didn't have the effort night after night. The Celtics bring it to you every single night. There's a problem with that when you get into the playoffs, because that's when everything gets equalized. That was what happened to Boston last year. More than anything, more than the injuries, more than the matchups, more than anything else, it was this. It was that when it came down to the Hawks tried just as hard as the Celtics, the Hawks were more talented. We'll see what happens this year when they run up against good teams. But with the Cavs, you know, for them, that effort really is a huge deal. And look, if they get knocked out, none of us are going to be amazed, because they've been garbage the last month and a half. Just have been. They've been garbage. They've had a problem all year. There's a legitimate reason to think there's a good chance that they get knocked out before the finals. And there's no reason to believe that they're going to beat the Warriors. There's none. There's no way you can talk yourself into that other than, well, they came back from 3-1, which is means that you're saying, well, they pulled off the greatest comeback of all time, so they can do it again. But, you know, are we looking at the Cavaliers and saying that they have, you know, like, you look at the Celtics and you say, well, they played great. They got the one seed. Well, okay, they finished one game ahead of the Cavaliers, who played like garbage.
We also know
that those records against those teams over 500 don't look great for Boston. We know what those records versus the elite teams in the league look like for Boston, and those aren't promising. And that stuff matters.
We'll see. This is kind of a loaded question, but something I wanted you to break down a little bit, because it's something else I noticed this year, is that, there's a lot of talented players in the league nowadays, but there's also a lot of talented players who don't have space to get into the league, it seems like. And the one guy I really point to as evidence of that was Yogi Ferrell, the way he broke in with the Mavericks, really shined, made a platform for himself on that team and was sensational for a big stretch of this season. And he was just one of those guys on the outside that didn't really have enough room to squeeze into the league. And when it comes to that, I think the fact that the D League is just, you know, it's gotten so much better over the years, but it's still such a crapshoot. I mean, you're seeing Yabusele just like take control of the league right now down there like he's Jordan or something. Like, if you have any level of talent, you can go down there and absolutely dominate it. Jordan Mickey did it. A lot of guys have done it. But few have come out of that league and really made waves in the NBA. Like, Hassan Whiteside has. A handful of other guys have. But it's just, you know, there's not enough space in the league for how many good basketball players there are in the world. And I think that's a big problem right now. Is that something you agree with?
I mean, there's a lot of talent. I don't think it's a problem. And I don't think that the D-League issue is such a problem. You want a number? Almost $300 million this summer was signed for guys that played in the NBA D League. $300 million were given to contracts for guys that played in the NBA D League. Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, you mentioned, Lance Thomas, Anthony Tolliver, Tim Frazier, Kent Bazemore, Jordan Clarkson, Jan Nahimi. These guys have all spent time in the D League. The league has always suffered with, you know, problems with having high-level talent. It's top-heavy because you get guys that know that they're going to get NBA gigs, and they stay stateside, and then the rest of the league is the problem. That's going to change next year. The two-way contracts, the way the league is being restructured, it's going to get changed next year. You're right that there's actually an immense amount of talent in this league. And I will say it's getting harder. You're seeing less of those veteran contracts that are just kind of guys that are there for no apparent reason. Can't do that anymore. You got to be able to play if you're going to be on a roster.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw Larry Sanders get tossed from Cleveland just a few days ago, which was pretty surprising. So that's definitely a true sentiment right now. Let's get into the playoffs a little bit before we get into your story. What we do here on the Bobcast is go from stories of aspiration to accomplishment. So we're going to get into your story right after this. But the playoffs, we have to hit on it a little bit. You were tweeting about some of your possible upsets alerts in the first round. What I'm really focusing on are four teams in particular: the Grizzlies, the Clippers, the Pacers, and the Bulls. Because I think if those four teams get wiped away in round one, like they could be, those could be the end of four very relevant teams this decade who have just slid the last few years like crazy. And you know, Memphis has kind of taken a little steep dive themselves from last year to this year. And, you know, I think if those four teams get wiped right away, like I just said, we could be seeing the end of eras for those four teams. So a lot of teams seem to be on, you know, kind of that middle ground where this might be their last little run. What do you think of that?
I don't agree. I think Memphis is fine. You know, Memphis got nothing from Parsons, and that's a big question for them going forward, whether or not they get anything from Parsons. And if they don't, they're going to go, they'll find somebody else. They'll figure out a way to either move or waive Parsons and just bite it. And it'll be a disaster, but, you know, they'll figure out a way to get talented guys around them. Memphis is better, I think, than the record. They lost a lot of games to teams under 500. Mm-hmm. They needed to win those games because they should have been the four seed. I think Memphis was the best of that group. They were capable of playing the best basketball. They always get malaise in the second half of the year. I'm not especially worried about it. They've had a bad matchup, though. The Spurs are obviously an elite team. I'm going to be interested to see how this one works out. I think the Grizzlies have played San Antonio really tough.
Yeah, I was surprised with some of those numbers you gave.
Yeah, we'll see kind of what winds up happening with San Antonio and what they look like in this matchup. They should win, obviously. But I think Memphis has a chance to kind of hang. You know, the Clippers, they're one team I definitely think they could blow it up, because if they do not make a run, especially if they get knocked out by the Jazz, yeah, there's going to be big changes with LA, and you're going to see Chris Paul playing somewhere else, and you're probably going to see Blake Griffin playing somewhere else, and you're probably going to see Doc Rivers coaching somewhere else. So there's a lot of things that are going to change if that's the case. That's just like the reality. But I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these are just tough matchups. And Indiana, they've already kind of revamped themselves. The big question with Indiana is if they get wiped out in the first round, Paul George may want out. Mm. And Boston's obviously going to be interested in that. And that really looks more and more like it's going. If you want to put together a blueprint for how you leave a situation in a small market, Paul George has kind of done it.
So those four or five matchups are very intriguing to me. Clippers, Jazz, Wizards, Hawks, too. It seems like a lot of people are taking that Wizards Hawks series lightly. I have it going deeper than five games, where a lot of people seem to have that going. What do you think of that series in particular, Hawks and Wizards? I think that's one of the more intriguing ones on the board, because you have a great offensive team in the Wizards, but the Hawks, they've kind of revamped themselves a little bit, and they have some of those traits that you look for in a playoff team: the strong rebounding, good defense, possession basketball, slowing the pace down. I think they're going to be able to compete in that series better than some people do.
I don't agree. I'm not sure. You know, I don't think the Hawks are very good. And I think that, especially, look, Dennis Schroeder has just not proven that he's a guy you can really believe in. Mm-hmm. And Dwight Howard, we know, is a guy that you can't really turn to. He's going to cost them possessions, winding the ball. Paul Millsap's still good, but Kent Bazemore has really slid. They are one of the worst offenses in the league, and that's a problem. You know, they're going to have to keep up with them. The other thing is, I think the Wizards are way better than people kind of believe. The Wizards are the second-best team in the East. They just are. They've got big guards. They've got strong centers. You know, going into the All-Star break, they had the ninth best defense in the NBA. That was after a very bad start to the year. They are a really good team. They slid the back half, and you could kind of tell watching their games, they just lost interest. Like, they started coasting because that's a team built for the playoffs. So, to me, I think Washington is strongly favored here. Now, I keep trying to find the upset here, right? I've looked at the first round. I'm like, one of these teams is going to get bit. And I don't think it's Boston. And so if it's not Boston, it's either Toronto or Washington.
It's got to be Boston, right?
No, it's not going to be Boston. I don't think there's any – look, the Bulls do not have it. Like, they just
it's
do
crazy.
Not.
It's crazy how some people just came out – like, you explained yourself on the Boston front, and you've been a big critic of the Celtics, but some people are so much worse than you. Like, there were some people coming out yesterday and talking like it was a no-brainer that the Bulls are going to be able to fight with them. I think the Bulls walked backward into the playoffs, getting the Magic and the Nets resting all their players. Like, Miami kind of got hosed there, I think.
I don't know if they got hosed. Miami wasn't good either. But Chicago's not a good team. Like, flat out, Chicago's not a good team.
So what are you looking at for that upset?
I don't know. I can't find it. The thing is, I went chalk first round, and I hate that, but I just can't find the upset. I can't find the one that I'm like, ooh, yeah, they're going to bite them. Bucks-Toronto is interesting, but I just can't imagine Toronto getting bit that many times. Mm-hmm. So I wind up believing, you know, that it's good. But if I look at it, could the Hawks do it? Sure. They got a formula. They're tough. They're physical.
Yeah.
They play good defense.
And they
can play possession basketball.
Late in the season.
Right. If the Wizards don't play like they have in the playoffs before, if it's flipped where before they had regular seasons and great playoffs, if it's flipped this year, then yeah, they're going down. It'll be an embarrassment. It'll be a shame for what was a really good year for them. But I don't like the matchups at all. For Atlanta in that one, Schroeder having the guard Wall, even, you know, really just Dwight Howard having to try and guard John Wall and pick and roll. Wall's fast enough to get by him, mm-hmm. and confident enough to finish at the rim. Beal versus Bazemore, I think, is a matchup that favors Washington in a heavy way. I like Otto Porter being able to punish them. The other thing is, the Hawks are gonna close the paint. That's what they do versus the Cavaliers. They're gonna all collapse inside to protect against drives. The Wizards have the ball moving the perimeter kind of weapons now to be able to punish them, especially with Bojan Bogdanovic. So I think the Wizards have too much firepower, but I'm not confident. I'm not confident in any of these series because I know one of them I'm wrong on. I know I'm wrong on one of these series because it's not going chalk.
Do the Thunder have any chance?
Yes. That's another one I was really close on. Look, so Oklahoma City's formula is this. You grind it down into a slow-paced game. You rough them up. You play physical. You make sure that you are closing off the three-point shooters as much as possible. You deal with Harden as much as you can. And you try and turn it into a 5-point game under 5 minutes. And in that situation, the Thunder had the experience and the weapons to be able to close that game. That's how Boston won in 2010. Mm-hmm. That 2010 final squad for Boston was not particularly awesome. But what they did do that was awesome was they were able to close games with lethal efficiency. Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett would just murder you, along with Rajon Rondo, would just destroy you in the final 5 minutes of a close game. They would just keep it close and then hammer you at the end. That's got to be the Thunder's approach. And if they can do that in three of the games, they can give themselves a chance. I think they've got a legit chance of threatening the Rockets.
All right. We're going to pick it up right on the other side. Just had a great playoff conversation. Matt Moore here on the Bobcast. We're going to get into his story of going from aspiration to accomplishment right after this break.
Hi, this is Larry H. Russell with a message on behalf of the network. As the leading online provider of audio video coverage of the Boston Celtics, CLNS Radio delivers fans the most provocative discussion and analysis from the most noted personalities in the Celtics realm of the World Wide Web. Home to the number one rated weekly podcast, which covers the NBA's winningest franchise, Celtics Beat is released first thing every Sunday morning. We deliver the hottest of takes and get the lowdown on all things Celtics from players, league executives, and the biggest names in the national basketball media. And it doesn't end there. The original Celtics podcasters John Duke and Justin Poulin have returned. Available Mondays on clnsradio.com. Celtics Stuff Live is back and better than ever before with featured guests that are the most familiar voices to Celtics Nation. Basketball in Boston is heating up and you don't want to miss any of this. Download the CLNS Radio mobile app now. Available for your iPhone and Android.
Back here on the Bobcast, episode 25 at this point. It's tough to believe, but we're 25 deep. Matt Moore here, Hardwood Paroxysm. It's an exciting day. Playoffs are almost here, but we're going to get down to his story a little bit. That's my favorite part of this show. We can kind of dig deep into these people's backgrounds that we have here on the program. And, you know, in your young days, Matt, I know you're very anti-fan. You're always getting on the fans' nerves, but were you once a fan yourself way back in the day?
I mean, I'm still a fan of the league, man. I still love these guys. Like, I just love this game, and I think it's amazing. Like, it's one of the reasons I always try and have respect for what these guys do is you watch these guys work hard every day and what they're capable of and how incredible they are. I think it's crazy not to be a fan. But, yeah, you know, I grew up as an Alonzo Mourning fan. I was a fan of his since he hit that big shot to put the Celtics out of the playoffs, funny enough, back in 1992. I loved him at Georgetown. I loved him at Georgetown, too. He was terrific. And so I was a Hornets fan, and then I kind of bounced around. And I would never live close enough to a team to be, like, locked into them. I always liked players. That was the thing, is I liked players. I moved around quite a bit with my fandom and attached to teams and liked various squads. I liked the 2004 Heat, the one that had Caron Butler and Lamar Odom along with Dwayne Wade. That team was awesome. That was a lot of fun team. It was a lot of fun to watch. The 7 seconds or less Suns. Yeah, I mean, I remember what it's like to be a fan. I think my thing with social media, I find it fascinating because in college, I was actually a psych major. I majored in social psychology. And so the dynamics of fans online is fascinating to me to see how their arguments are replicated across fan bases, how they spread, how talking points are spread, all of these things to kind of like, so like Isaiah starts scoring in the fourth quarter and then it's like, oh, he's Mr. Fourth Quarter. It's like all the arguments for Isaiah Thomas get replicated too.
He's
the king in the fourth. And then it gets replicated across the fan base. And so any conversation about how good Isaiah Thomas is, a Celtics fan would be like, hey, who leads the league in fourth quarter scoring? And you're like, okay. And it's, so these talking points are really funny about how they spread, because I'll read them about them somewhere, and then they'll get spread around, and so other fans will bring them in. I find those dynamics really interesting.
So you got your start with AOL. How did your whole writing experience begin? You said you were a psych major in college. How did you end up getting into the sports writing sphere of things?
I was fresh out of college and, not fresh out. I was out of college.
Where'd you go to school?
I was University of Missouri.
Alrighty.
One of the finest, journalism programs in the country, which I did not attend. I was in Austin, Texas, and I was running poker games in bars and restaurants. And, I'm working in a research coordinator position. And so what I wound up doing was, I was getting married, and my wife, my soon-to-be wife, was like, dude, you got to stop going to the bars every night. Like, you have to stop going to the bars every day. Like, she's like, you can go, just don't shut them down. She's like, you gotta get a hobby. And so I was like, all right. Like, I started a sports blog. So I was big into sports blogs at the time. And so I started my own sports blog and did some writing. And then I got linked on ESPN's True Hoop Network one day. And that was amazing. And I looked at my traffic. I was like, whoa, like 500 people read this. That's amazing. And I just kept at it. And I started emailing people and talking to them and having them do guest posts and stuff like that. And I built a network. And one day I'm talking to Tom Ziller. And I was talking about Paroxysm joining SB Nation. He was like, and we were just talking about what we should do and or whether I should do that. And I was like, well, yeah, I was like, the goal is to eventually work for AOL Fanhouse. I love Fanhouse, and which was a great site back in the day with a lot of great writers that are now at various places around the web. And Tom goes, wait, you want to write for Fanhouse? And I said, well, yeah. And he said, hang on. And he said, hang on a minute. And then 10 minutes later, Matt Watson, the editor there, emails me and is like, when can you start? And that's how I got on.
So what was the inspiration behind HP Basketball? What do you think built that platform into being something unique, something that people come to when they want to get their basketball fix?
Talented writers. You know, we got really talented writers. Rob Mahoney at Sports Illustrated wrote for us. James Herbert at CBS Sports wrote for us. Zach Harper at FanRag wrote for us. We have had, by last count, 34 people that have logged a byline at one point or another for Hardwood Paroxysm have gone on to have full or part-time positions, either with teams, in the media, or as full-time media members. And we're really proud of that. Like, we have really great writers. And that to me is like the core of what made it successful was all the good writers that we had go along there.
What do you think is the key to good, engaging writing? There's a lot of stories out there that, you know, break the whole numbers game down, go slide through the games, really, you know, just break down the fundamentals of the game. Then you got those very personal people-type stories. Baxter Holmes had a really nice piece about the Celtics and their peanut butter jelly sandwiches a few weeks back that a lot of people were raving about. So you kind of have those two sides of sports writing, you know, the number crunching, all that stuff, and then, you know, the personal side of things. What to you it makes a good, engaging story?
The subject and the writer, you can do those things if you do them well. You got to find, if you're going to do something that's an analytics thing, if you're going to break down an analysis, you got to find something that's outside the box. You can't do like, hey, here's why Russell Westbrook is really good at layups. I don't need to know that. I know Russell Westbrook's really good at layups. I've watched him. Actually, he's not this year. He's shooting 45.6% on drives. But anyway, I don't need to know that. I don't need to know, like here's why LeBron James is good. I know LeBron James is good. You better bring, hey, this is the one thing that LeBron still struggles with. Or you better bring, this is the one thing LeBron does that the Raptors absolutely cannot stop. You better show people specific details that they're going to care about. And if you're going to do a personal story, you know, you look at what Lee Jenkins does. And he finds all these details. He finds incredible details in every single story that he does. Mm-hmm. Look at the Sam Presti article he posted the other day. And it's just chock full of these tiny details that he's full of. Like the fact that whenever he gets a book recommendation, he immediately tells his assistant to go buy it at a local bookstore because he won't wait for Amazon. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. That's a tiny detail. But those details are what make something really great. You got to think outside the box, I think. And I think you need to incorporate new media. Like you need to have video. You need to have visual evidence in order to be able to back up what you're doing. You know, Zach Lowe, he's got clips in almost every post that he does to be able to say, look, this is what I'm talking about. So that you know, I'm not just talking about these things in the abstract. If you want to see it, here's the proof. Like, here's the pudding. Here you go. And that stuff, I think, is really important. More than ever on the online, it's not about having a hot take. It's about having a smart take that you can back up with interesting facts that tells people something that they didn't know beforehand. That's what matters.
I'm glad you brought up those visuals. I think that's why, beyond accessibility, I think, you know, web-based content now has just blown print content away. Why do you think the media industry as a whole is still so hung up on keeping print around? Because there's just so many more things you can accomplish with online-driven content that, you know, print doesn't give you. And, you know, we had that whole situation with the Patriots and the Falcons and the Boston Globe printing about how the Patriots lost that game. There's just so many issues associated with print. So many issues in the media in general nowadays. Why do you think the media industry as a whole is really gung-ho about sticking to print? Is it just the tradition driven behind it?
I think it's money. You know, you can charge more. Getting subscriptions online is very tough. It just still is. So there's money behind it. There's also, you got to bear in mind, there's jobs, right? If you get rid of your printing press, you're getting rid of every guy that works in there. That's like 50 people. Mm-hmm. You get rid of all those jobs. You're getting rid of all the delivery drivers, all those jobs. You're hurting newsstands. They're going to lose jobs. This stuff is a very real part of it. Now, there's whenever there's tech innovation, there's other jobs that open up, hopefully better ones. And that's part of that too. But I think that's part of it is, you know, these functions have been around for a long time and they provide a backbone of an economy. Mm-hmm. And if you just gut it just because it's convenient, you lose sight of the real human factor.
Good, great, great point right there. I didn't think about that much at all, but very real part of it. CBS Sports, you've been working there for a little while now. What's the greatest lesson you've learned working with that as, you know, your main platform? And how did you end up there in the first place?
I went to a blog conference called Blogs with Balls. And I ran into a guy named – yeah, that's what it's called. I ran into a guy named Eric Kay, who's – one of our guys at CBS, one of the management guys at CBS, and they were looking at kind of they didn't have any blog platforms. It's 2010. They didn't have any. They didn't have aggregators. They didn't have curators. Didn't have bloggers. They didn't have anybody. All they had were senior writers and then AP copy. And I wound up throwing about $80 worth of drinks at him and his associate, and telling him about why he needed they needed to add a blog platform. And he was talking to me and Zach Harper. And afterwards, he called Zach. And he offered Zach the job. But Zach had gotten an offer from ESPN to start doing chats for them. And that was a door with ESPN. So he took that job at the time. And I didn't hear anything back. So I went ahead and I prepped a 20-slide PowerPoint deck and sent it to EK unprompted and said, this is what you can do if you have blogs. This is what your platform is missing. This is what you need, and here's how we can do it. Mm-hmm. I sent it to him, and then he's like, all right, this is a lot to deal with, and you're obviously pretty smart. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I just want to be your MBA guy, but I can help you build a system. Mm-hmm. He said, okay. And so they hired me, and I started the first day of free agency in July 2010, like 5 days before LeBron made the decision. And so I started, and I brought on Royce Young from Daily Thunder, and I brought on Ben Golliver from Blazers Edge. Mm-hmm. And we kind of set up a system, and I recommended they hire Will Brinson, who's been their lead NFL guy for a couple of years. Will's amazing, and I recommended some other hires, and we built a really good system there. The number one thing I think I've learned is that you don't have to be first. You don't have to be first. Do it the best. If you do it the best and you do it in an interesting way, people are going to read it. You're going to get your clicks. People are going to be happy. That's what you should be focused on. Give readers something that they want to share. Give readers something they're going to enjoy. People will find good content. Do it right. Don't be first.
You have a very interesting social media strategy, and I was talking to Snotty Drippin on the show last week, and I told him you were coming on, and he was like, you know, don't give him too hard of a time, Bobby. You know, I noticed what he does. He pokes, he prods at these fan bases a little bit here or there, kind of gets them ticked off a little bit. Would you say that's true?
Somebody in high school gave me a pin for my backpack, and it says, I am a born agitator. And I've held on to it. It's on my desk. I've never gotten rid of it because that's kind of me. Is I just have a natural tendency. My wife says I have a tendency to poke bears with spoons. That's just kind of built into my DNA. I think the biggest part is I want people to question what they're thinking. I want people to get out of their mindset. And for fans, here it is. It's really easy to be a fan that says my team's awesome, everyone else sucks. But that's stupid. Look, if everyone else sucks, then what you did isn't impressive. But if everyone's awesome, then what your team is even better. LeBron James doesn't have to be a clown fraud show in order for you to beat him. He can be the best player of all time. And if you beat him, guess what? You top the best player of all time. I don't think he is, Jordan. But you could say he's the second best player of all time. Value what these guys do. Respect the work that these guys do. Respect how great they are at something that you love, which is the NBA. Mm-hmm. You don't have to hate everything else. And also, if I tell you that there's a weakness with your team, I'm not doing it because I hate you. I'm not doing it because I hate the city. I'm definitely not doing it because I haven't watched the damn team, because I watch every single team as much as I can.
Yeah, we learned that today, yep.
It's because It's because I actually noticed something, and it's part of my analysis, and my job is to find those things, the good and the bad, to be able to say, you know what? Jay Crowder really struggles getting around screens. He does. He has a hard time getting around screens defensively. And being able to say, you know what? Marcus Smart can switch on to fives because that's how freaking strong he is. Mm-hmm. He can guard one through five, and that's a huge ability with his hands to be able to disrupt plays inside. So I could say both of those things. If I say something you don't like, don't dismiss it. If I say something I like, don't raise it up. Ever be, you know, considerate and follow through. Read other people. Read as much as you can. Be a smart, educated fan. That makes everybody enjoy the game more.
Do you like to admit when you're wrong?
All the time.
So we'll see you in a couple weeks on the Celtics. I'm still very excited about that one. But, you know, great points today. I was very interested to hear about your psychology background and that whole aspect of your coverage, because that kind of makes me learn a lot of things about the way you approach the game. It's very impressive. It's very unique, I'd say, as well. Before we let you go today, thanks for sticking around through all of this, giving us your background and your story. I got to hit you with the most loaded question of the day. What's your favorite thing to do outside the realm of sports? It seems like, you know, you enjoy a nice drink, but what are some of your favorite hobbies when it comes to stepping away from the basketball court?
I'm a film buff. I love movies. I just really love movies. I almost majored in film in college. I'm huge into playing the video game Overwatch. That's what I do a lot of the time to relax, is just get away from everything and play Overwatch. I love to read everything online. I'm just obsessive about reading stuff online. But more than anything, man, it's just hanging out with my kids. I got a boy and a girl, and that time with them is better than almost anything. My kid got an award today just for being kind.
It's
like what he got an award for. Maybe, and I was just like,
for the son of
stop that, Bobby. I know where you're going there. Stop
the
that.
Son of the agitator is nice and kind. Who could have imagined?
But I was so proud of him for that. And so, you know, I tell you, having kids is awesome.
Do you have a good book recommendation for me before we let you go?
For basketball, I'd say The Art of the Beautiful Game by Chris Ballard. It's my favorite basketball book ever. Published a couple of years ago. It's got really great in-depth stuff on just everything about the game, and you understand the league a lot better reading it. And then outside of that, I would say, Who Gets What? It's a book about economics, and it's actually really fascinating to show about, like, markets and how we make deals with one another. It's a fascinating book.
Mm-hmm. There we go. That's Matt Moore, Hardwood Paroxysm. You're going to want to follow him through the playoffs, whether he pisses you off, whether he makes you happy. Always analyzing and breaking down the game to the best of his ability. It was great meeting you today. It was great breaking down your whole approach to the game today. Matt, I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Good luck to the Celtics. Take care.
Matt Moore, episode 25 in the books. It's time for the playoffs, folks. It really is. And we're going to get into it over the next couple of episodes. We're going to get really into it over at Celtics Blog, where we have some very sensational content coming down the pipe there. We also got the Celtics postgame show after every game on CLNS Radio. And, of course, our great network of shows is going to be bringing you everything you need to know across the board when it comes to Celtics coverage. Even other coverage now as we start to bring more shows on board with CLNS Radio. So you want to follow at CLNS Radio, CLNS Fans on Facebook, to get your scoop every time. If this show intrigues you, if you enjoyed this episode, please. It comes out usually once, sometimes twice a week over at clnsradio.com/Bobcast iTunes. If you could, please subscribe to that. It is the best way you can help me, my show. Also, the other way you can help the show, let me know what stinks, what's great, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. I'm always taking feedback at RealBobManning. DM me. You can email me from there. It's, you know, it's the most important thing to me. I want you to enjoy this show. Also, Blue Apron. Very sensational food service program I tell you a lot about on this program. They're offering you 3 free meals to try the service. They can customize your meals. They have a unique menu every single week, 52 weeks a year over at there. All you got to do is go to blueapron.com/Bobcast and you're going to get 3 meals free with free shipping to try out the service. No losses there. win, no losses. Just try out the service, get yourself a few meals, and let me know what you think. I've really enjoyed the service myself. I'll be going with it fully next year when we're on South Campus. So there you go. I'm Bobby Manning. Thanks again for being with us today. Matt Moore, thank you for being with us. And we will see you next week. Going to get some more guests lined up. Working hard to get some big, high-profile guests for you guys. That's my job on this end. That asks some stupid questions. So thanks again for being with us today. Had a good time. And as I always say, peace.